you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey everyone, welcome to a Running Plays podcast episode that I'm very excited about. We're presented by Wendy's, of course, and I'm Grant Liffin, and I am joined by, let's give the list of what you could be. You're you know, to kids these days, Rex Chapman, to kids these days, you may be the funniest guy on Twitter. That's what you might be right now, just to the younger generation. But to my generation or older, basketball star, advocate for many important issues that we're going to get to. And also, a hell of a dunker. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, buddy. Yeah. I'm good. It's good to join you. It's really good to talk some basketball. You know, I'm already missing it. We're out of the bubble just a couple of weeks, and I'm ready to get back to it. I don't know if the players are yet, but I am.
I mean, there's so much to get to, but let's just start strictly Warriors here. I don't know how much you've been paying attention to their situation, but after a season in which they were the last place team in the league, they're already saying, hey, let's get back to being a contender. First things first, do you think that's possible with the team they have right now?
I do. And I do because Stephen is so good. Klay is so good. You know, if he comes back healthy, which I believe he will, they're going to fill in a couple of important pieces. I know. Steve Kerr, I go way back with. We were in the same draft years and years ago. We played against each other, and we're good buddies to this day. Stephen Wardell Curry, I grew up with his dad in Charlotte. Stephen was born my rookie year. They lived two doors down, and Sonya and Dell used to bring Stephen over to my place, leave him with me for a couple hours while they'd go to a movie. I was 19 and was just hoping he wouldn't, poop in his pants. So I had to change a diaper, but that's my first little NBA buddy. So I have a real love affair with the Golden State Warriors.
That's awesome. Well, let's get to that relationship with Steph here first, before we even go into the topical stuff with what's happening right now. So you were the first ever draft pick for the Charlotte Hornets. You were teammates with Dell, as you said, you're mm-hmm. right there neighbors. Are there any stories that come up the top of your head about Steph as a young kid?
Well, yeah, I just remember Stephen was really little. You know, he was a baby when I first got there. He was born just months before the draft. His dad was the first expansion pick for the Hornets. And then they chose me with the first college pick. So we just coincidentally were really almost next door neighbors. Muggsy Bogues lived right there in our little complex right down the street. So Dell and Muggsy and I were really, you know, just young and learning, trying to find our way in the NBA. We rode everywhere together. We went to practices together. We went to the team bus together, to the games together, all of that. I remember when Stephen was just learning to talk, and I went to pick Dell up for practice one day, and Stephen just came out of the house just crying. And Dell said, I got to go to practice, Stephen. He said, you go practice again, Daddy? Like, how much with this practice stuff? And then, there were several times that, you know, we'd go to ball games. And, you know, since I was a rookie, I'm always in the back seat of the car. Dell's usually driving. We had a car seat, which Muggsy should have been in, but he was sitting up front. And then we had Stephen in the car. In the car seat. We all thought we were pretty good, and the baby was better than us the whole time.
Little did you know.
Little did we know. We thought we were hot stuff, and he was just chilling in the back seat, biding his time.
Oh, my God. When did you know when you're, let's say, you know, being around him? And I don't know to what age you're around him consistently, but when did you know this kid was going to be a stud in the league?
Really not till college. And even then, you know, you wondered because he was playing at a small school. a funny story. I was just finished playing. Dell was just finished playing. And Stefan was playing in a JV game. He was a sophomore playing in a JV game. And he didn't get in the game until like 30 seconds to go. And so that tells you, you know, the strides that he made. He wanted to go to Duke so badly. They didn't offer him a scholarship. You know, Virginia Tech offered him to walk on. We know all those stories, man. And it wasn't until he went to school. And I just remember looking up at the TV one day. I saw the two top scorers in the country were Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry. And I went, what? And so then he could always shoot it. He could always shoot it. He had big feet, big hands. You just hope he would grow into his feet and hands, and he sure did.
That's so funny. You know, it is thinking, you know, everyone loves to tell the folklore of Michael Jordan not making his freshman mm-hmm. basketball team. And it almost, and then obviously he became Michael Jordan. But, you know, Steph Curry obviously is not considered to be Michael Jordan status, but for being such a superstar and a legend, it's crazy to hear how late it took before anyone believed in him, before he even yeah. jumped to that level. And it's almost, I mean, he should have the folklore just as much in that way.
I agree. And it reminds me a lot of a former teammate of mine, that one of my best friends to this day. He was a rookie when I was in Phoenix, and that's Steve Nash. Everything came to Steve really late. He had one Division I offer, and that was Santa Clara. Nobody believed in him. Nobody. He wasn't McDonald's All-American, you know, that type of player. He wasn't highly sought after. Everything he got late. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, we all want to be a high school, you know, All-American, all that stuff. I was fortunate. And then I got to the NBA, and I couldn't, you know, I made an All-Star team once. That's it. I couldn't keep going. These guys, you know, Stephen, you know, Clay to a degree, you know, guys that stuff came to them late. I think that that's a really powerful thing, because you got to learn to grow up and go through some hard stuff before everybody starts kissing your butt.
It's, you know, but that's the point. You're talking about the kissing the butt. It's like,
yeah,
you know, these guys, there's something said about their humility, right? And their ability mm-hmm. to just, they fight for what they've got, but they keep a humble presence about them. Do you think that has something to do with the way that they had to kind of earn their keep rather than getting their butt kissed? Not that everyone who's been butt kissed forever that all of a sudden they're, you know, stuck up, but yeah.
Well, you know, like, just for instance, the first time I ever really had a disappointment in basketball ever was when I got traded from Charlotte to Washington. But I was 23 by that time. You know, I hadn't gone through really any adversity in high school or college or in any way basketball wise until then. And then, so at that point, that's a real, you know, that's a real shock, especially if you didn't really know that that could happen. So yeah, I think that, you know, and look, these guys, I was in school 2 years. I could have stood to be in school a little more. Stefan, 3 years. Steve, 4 years. These are guys who were able to mature and come up. It's just kind of different now with the one and done.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I guess there is a maturity. We forget, you know, we're talking draft all the time now, and we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But everyone's trying to do these interviews to figure out who's the next player. And you realize you're giving all this money to an 18-year-old or something, and yeah. you're not who they're going to be yet. You know, you're haven't matured into who you are. Those are fantastic stories. Do you still keep in touch with Dell or Steph? Or
oh anything? Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Dell and I text every week, you know, a few times during the season more, but yeah, love those guys. Muggs as well. And then, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Seth.
Oh yeah.
Seth and Sadell and Sonya. Sonya was basically raising me and Steph at the same time. I remember she came, I didn't know how to do laundry, and you know, I'm a rookie. She came down to my place. We'd been on the road for like 2 weeks, and Dell apparently told Sonya to come down to my apartment and just look inside. So she came in, looked inside, and I didn't know how to do laundry. So on the road, I had just bought like 60 new pair of underwear, and I was just wearing underwear brand new. She had to wash like 50 pair of underwear.
Yeah, that's how you know you have a close relationship with somebody.
That's right.
That's how you know. That's the level. That's the mark now.
That's right.
That's so funny. Yeah. Well, during the grand years of the Warriors, that half decade, obviously you have the relationship with Steve, Dell, Steph. Did you come out to Oracle to watch some games?
Yeah, I was there a couple years ago when they won it, one of the best nights. I wasn't a member of any championship teams. I made it to the playoffs a few times. And being out there when they beat Cleveland a couple years ago was just fantastic. You know, we went out after the game, went down to Stephen and his wife's restaurant in San Francisco. Just had a great time. And, you know, I love those guys like they're my family. They've treated me so well over the years. And I feel very fortunate to know those guys.
That's awesome. That's great. And we'll bring him up a little later when we talk about more of the your advocacy and the everything that's happening in the world right now, which is quite a lot. But going back to the draft quickly, you know, the Warriors have this veteran team, the team that had already done it. You know, you have that core three, but then they have a bunch of young guys with them. They have the number two overall pick in the draft. In your mind, is this an opportunity to either draft a guy that high that you think, let's try to see if he can be the future with this team, or do you try to trade that pick and go for someone who's more veteran, win now type situation?
That's tough. And I'm sure that's what they're struggling with right now, and maybe not so much struggling with what those guys have done out there, Steve, and those guys, Bob. They're so thoughtful, and you know they are, I think, playing chess. It's just been beautiful when they traded for I always want to say Mitchell for Andrew Wiggins last year. I thought it was brilliant. He's a young player he's perfect to grow with Steph and Clay as a young guy. If he takes a step, you know, I'm not sure that there's somebody in the draft this year that, you know, you could put right on that team and make a big difference. So I almost look for them to try to package it in some way, or maybe make the pick and trade later down the road this season They're in a weird spot, but it's a good spot. I mean, heck, man, they just won the title a couple years ago and got the number two pick in the draft. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, the comparisons obviously always come back to the Spurs in that way, but at the same time, you know, there was a Tim Duncan in that draft, right?
Yes.
Versus right now. Are there any prospects or anything? I don't know how much you've been paying attention to prospects. Is there any that you have a draft crush or any of that?
Not really. And I try to stay away from it as much as I can, because I do Kentucky basketball stuff back here, and you know, I'll get in trouble every now and then if I start throwing out college kids' names, especially around these parts.
Right, exactly. Just all the Kentucky kids. He says everybody selected Kentucky.
Every one of them. Take them first.
I mean, honestly, it's probably not a bad. They have a pretty good track record in the NBA. The Run and Plays podcast, sponsored by Wendy's. Wendy's doesn't just have breakfast; it has a breakfast worth talking about. Don't let your friends miss out. Do you pay attention to these hypothetical trades that get thrown around on Twitter? Do you ever go, you know, you don't buy into that stuff?
I really don't. I know how hard it is to make trades, how difficult it can be. And, you know, nobody's giving away good players. That's right. Just not happening. And, you know, and we're in a weird time right now too. You know, a lot of uncertainty. Heck, we don't even know when the season's starting. The salary cap's taking a hit. Teams are going to have to adjust, readjust. Some teams may have to blow things up. So I think patience probably right now is a pretty good thing. And that's tough if you're not a very good team. You know, for some of these teams that don't have the second pick and have been perennially bad the last few years, this has got to be a tough time, man, because you're just hoping you get better with the guys you have and limited practice.
Right. That's a good point. I guess everyone has to count their blessings, because you could be in a situation where, you know, the Warriors are so bad for so long, but they never dealt with a pandemic and everything happening plus being so core of a franchise for a while.
Yeah, so. You know, and I think it did well for, you know, I missed watching them play like in the bubble. And I'm sure for their young players, Steve, Bob, those guys, they would have liked it. I think in your guys' situation, it was good that they had the time off. I just look at teams like the Knicks. You know, those teams are the ones that really need. I was glad to see my Phoenix Suns make it in and played very well. So that was good to see. But, you know, for some of these young teams right now, it's iffy.
Right. And you mentioned the Suns, and it's crazy to think about a team like the Suns who are up and coming, played so well in the bubble. And all of a sudden you go, yeah, maybe a playoff run next year. But then you think about how many teams are in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
The Pelicans didn't make it. You know, the Spurs may not make it again this year. The Warriors weren't in it. The
Warriors are going to come back.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Sacramento's, you know, they've got a chance.
Exactly.
They can get better. Denver's going to be good. You know, it's tough in the West, man. It's tough.
Right. Yeah, and it's wild to think about how many young, good teams might not have a chance to blossom in the playoffs.
Right.
I feel like the only team right now in the West that you kind of almost count out is the Timberwolves right now, but they have some good young pieces.
They've got talent.
Yeah.
They're going to have to make some changes. But, yeah, we still don't know how those two guys are going to play together.
Right.
DeAndre and Carl.
Right.
So, you know, it'd be interesting.
So, looking back just at the Warriors' historic era, did you ever watch that team and be like, man, it would have been fun to play in that system and that style?
You're talking about what they're playing with now?
Or just when they, you know, your Steph, Clay, KD.
Yeah, absolutely. But I got to tell you, I'm still blown away that we sit here and talk about the Golden State Warriors being champions. No, I'm serious. I'm not trying to crap on the Warriors. I love the Warriors. It's one of my favorite stops. It's been one of my favorite stops. But I got to tell you, you know, in 1988, when we started flying out there, it was in Oakland. We stayed at the Hilton, not the greatest spot in town. Always had sporadic, you know, pretty good fans, even though, but the teams were bad, man. Bad teams my whole career. And now we're talking about them as world champs. Three-time world champs?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So that's my overriding thing, you know, and when I sit back and go, man, the Warriors, and I go, the Warriors. But it's beautiful. It really is, because just seeing what it's, and I haven't been to the new building yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm dying to see that. What they've done with that franchise, the ownership since taking over, my goodness, what a blueprint, I think, you know. And obviously you have to draft well, and they have, but, you know, kudos to those guys out there, because they've got a terrific coach, they've got a terrific front office, and they let those guys do their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. That is something to be said, to have an owner that allows them to do what they need to do. And, you know, it is funny. I grew up in the Bay Area, so I watched the Warriors my whole life. So this also still to me is like a pinch me moment of like, wait, what? Because where it catches me off guard all the time. And it just every now and then I have to remind myself is I'm on Twitter, and anytime, this is kind of what the Lakers used to do. Anytime someone may leave their team, automatically everyone goes, oh, they're going to the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
Can you imagine saying that like 7 years ago? Like,
I know. I'm going to Golden State. You're going, what?
I remember when they jumped in the Dwight Howard sweepstakes. This is back 2013 or something. Everyone's like, he's not going to Golden State. What are you talking about? Yeah.
No, it's crazy.
It's wild how it's changed. But, you have to ask these questions when you're talking to someone who played in a different era like you. And you played against the Bulls teams. You played against the Michael Jordan Bulls teams. And a lot of comparisons like to get made. And in my opinion, personally, it's when the Warriors against the Bulls, it's whatever era and rules they're playing in, make like that team would
agree.
Play, right? Would you say the same? Okay.
Yes.
It's just people want to say like absolute, oh my goodness, this team, but it's kind of a different
game. Well, it's a different game. Here's the thing. Imagine playing today's rules and everybody's in shape like they were, right? Today's rules, and Luke Longley's got to guard Draymond. And he's got to come out on the floor and guard Draymond. He can't just stand back and, you know, so that Horace Grant, he's got to guard Andrew Wiggins. Now that's on the other end, I get it, but today's players, I was built for this league, but really I was 6'3", 6'4", 185-ish. I was built for a league where you can't touch and hold and grab and all that stuff. I was a two guard playing against guys 6'7", Reggie Miller, Glenn Rice, 6'8", Michael, Clyde, 6'7", every night in an era where they posted up too.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's just way different. Now, I got to tell you, that team, that Jordan team, those Jordan teams, they were legit, man. They were really good. Like, they weren't messing around. And, let's not forget, they had Michael. And Michael was no player wants to say, man, that dude's the greatest player I've ever seen. Nobody ever wants to say that. And we certainly didn't think that at the time because you're competitive and all that. But he was. He was right. That good. His hands, man, so big. You know, most of us, if there's a loose ball, a ball glances off the rim and goes toward the corner, 9 of us out there are going for the ball with 2 hands to go get it. Michael, while the ball's going that way, could go with 1 hand, suck it, and turn and be gone. You're playing a different game, man. You're playing a different game.
Yeah, I mean, you also mentioned you were meant for the today's league. You shot – there was a couple seasons that you're shooting 6 threes a game. You had, a couple
late
games where you made 9 threes in a couple games. So can you – how much would you be shooting on the Rockets team now?
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine. You know, toward the end of my career, I really wasn't a great three-point shooter, or I guess I was good enough. But, you know, I didn't stand out, really. I'd make big shots, and I could get hot. By the end of my career, you know, I was playing with some really good players that had to be double-teamed, from Alonzo Mourning to Jason Kidd to KJ. So I was kind of left free. More free than I'd ever been, and we were starting to shoot more threes. I remember a couple times taking like 11 or 12 threes in a game, and just looking at the stat sheet, like my dad would be so mad at me right now, you know. Or you could have never done that when I first came in the league.
Right.
If you took 5 threes in a game, you better make 4 of them.
Right.
I mean, but it's just changed. The whole game has changed. And that line, I watch old, you know, I'll see an old clip of Bulls or when we were playing back in the day, everybody just packed in the paint.
Right. Exactly.
Packed in the paint. There's so much room, taking long twos,
right.
Everybody taking long twos.
Yeah, nowadays that's like you're banned
offended.
From you're what? Banned from. How dare you? What is your problem? But that's it. You just met. That's the Steph Curry. You know, a lot of people credit Steph Curry mm-hmm. with transitioning, and you know, to be fair, that also does include Klay Thompson. And
yes.
Steph can't do what he's doing without you know the same everyone
agreed.
Shooting like they do.
Agreed.
And that's the league now, and it's
yep.
just transition. So I think that's. Sometimes when we look at the historical perspective of it, we'll look back and say, this team actually changed the way the NBA played,
yes.
which is cool. It's kind of fun. I like seeing people
I do too.
Shooting threes and dunking.
I do too. I love it.
Are you faithful to the Bay? 49ers 2021 season tickets are available now and locations are filling up quickly. Lock in your seats with a deposit today to secure your spot for next season. For more information, visit 49ers.com/season tickets.
All right, so let's transition to your post basketball life now, and let's just start off with the blocker charge movement you created. And I remember when you put those first ones out there on social media, and I was like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen, because they were literally like is this guy doing a blocker charge, or is this animal running
yeah.
over a person a blocker charge? Did you have any idea it was going to blow up like this?
No, and just to real quick, you know, I played in the NBA for 12 years. I got out of the NBA, and for about 14 years, I had a bad painkiller addiction. And so I was in and out of rehab. And in 2000, but I had Twitter all through that time. I rarely used it. probably had 50 or 60,000 followers just from basketball. Mm-hmm. I got out of rehab in 2014 and been able to be clean for about 6 years from painkillers. But when I got out of rehab, this was in 2014, I really wasn't doing much on Twitter. And then around 2016, 17, I started getting back into it, which is when we had a new president. And I was so disheartened, and I wanted off of social media from just the toxic, you know, political climate. And just one day saw a video of a school of dolphins swimming into shore as this guy was paddleboarding out and a dolphin jumped up, hit him in the chest. And I said, that's a charge. And I put it out. People thought it was cute or whatever. And then that was really great, because then I didn't have to worry about saying stuff on Twitter and doing stuff. And it, so I just started putting out the funny videos, putting out the videos here and there. And I don't know, I just took off from there. It's so weird, but it's opened some doors to do other things, have a bigger platform to, you know, speak on things that I'm passionate about. One of them's, you know, racism. I've always kind of been in tune with that part of things in the world and here in America. You know, now too on opioids, I'm able to kind of bring some awareness. I did an ad here not long ago for Amy McGrath here in Kentucky. So, you know, and that, I think a lot of that is a product of just that silly Twitter account.
Well, yeah, no, and that's, I wanted to transition to this, and you know, that Twitter account has given you, and obviously your playing career, you probably could have had this platform either way with your playing career, but this has given you a chance to have a broader audience probably.
I agree.
And, you know, we hear about opioid addictions and we hear the term thrown around, but so to a lot of people, it's an obscure concept, right? It doesn't affect me, so I don't really understand how it affects, right? Can you explain to people just like what is a day in the life of an addiction in that way? Like what drugs is it, and like how does it affect you?
Yeah. I was really highly addicted to painkillers, and the very first drug that did it was a drug called OxyContin. And I didn't necessarily drink during my career. I didn't have a drop of alcohol until I was like 22, and I just didn't really like it. I didn't smoke, I didn't get high. I just wasn't that guy. And within a year and a half of being out of basketball, I had 7 surgeries my last 3 years of playing. Doctor gave me OxyContin, and within 2 days, I knew I was in love. It was a pill, a drug that just it made me think. You know, I've always had some social anxiety. I always had, and still do some. And it was a drug that allowed me to feel a little more comfortable in my own skin, like going to the mall or going to eat or. I always had these thoughts, are the people looking at me? Did someone just recognize me? Are they coming up to me? Do they know me or do they not? Do they want to talk basketball or what's, and I would kind of stress out about that. But taking that medication, it kind of lowered my guard some. I felt like I was a nicer person. I felt smarter and better husband, better father, all that stuff. And I say it all the time, you know, drugs are fun at first. Then it's fun with problems, and then it's just problems, and that happens very quickly. The other part about it, it's a drug that just sort of makes you think, it'll be all right. While the house is burning down around you, it'll be all right. Throw some water on it. And so it just lulls you into this false sense of security. And it's a pretty bad deal. You know, for years I took Vicodin. Those are the opioids, the painkillers. And, you know, really it's when you go and you detox from these opioids, the pain pills, it's akin to detoxing from heroin. And that's a scary thing. And you know, for someone like myself who had always, you know, I always pride myself in taking care of myself and I like to have fun, but not, it's still, when I think about it at times when I can see outside myself and be like, man, I can't believe that's you that did that it happened to. I certainly didn't set out for, you know, a drug addict to be part of my story, you know? But here we are.
Well, I mean, it's fantastic what you're doing, just sharing, and I appreciate that. And I don't think, you know, we hear about it and, you know, you hear heroin, cocaine, and all these things, but you don't think about painkillers in the same way, Oxycontin, Vicodin, and it's a real crisis. It's an actual, the football, you know, the football, high school football, everything. It becomes
it's
like
an epidemic.
Yeah, it's a true epidemic. And so I appreciate you speaking out on that. And obviously, again, you speak out on racism and Black Lives Matter, and you've been very vocal politically recently. And obviously, we have a big election coming up. Have you, I mean, knowing how toxic social media can be, have you dealt with hate, death threats, or any of that?
Oh, yeah. Not, I don't think death threats, but so many people that just are, you know, that were maybe furious that I made a political ad, or furious that what I found is it's not, these people are not mad about what I'm saying. They're mad that I'm saying it. And it's almost like, hey, don't tell some of our secrets, you know, our Southern secrets here that we want to keep hidden. Nope. We're past that time. You know, I was, you know, the day that 2 days after George Floyd was killed in Minnesota, a Kentucky senator here, a senator from Kentucky was striking down anti-lynching legislation in Washington. And for me as a Kentuckian, it makes me want to scream. It makes me want to cry. So, you know, there came a point where, yeah, I like to keep the Twitter light and fun and all that stuff. But there just comes a point where I think your silence says more. You know, you've got to pick a side, and I feel like you need to stand up for what's right. And, you know, I fully plan on being on the right side of history here, and I'm not going to apologize for it.
Well, I mean, one of your biggest advocates also is Steve Kerr. He's been very vocal on social media and just in general as well. Mm-hmm. Stephen Curry has stepped up, and a lot of the Warriors actually have as a coach. I'm so proud.
I am. And I saw some of the stuff that Steve, of course, you know, I love Steve, and we're buddies. Stephen, I'm really proud of what the things that he's done and said and been able to do, not being in the bubble. You know, maybe it didn't get as much traction as it might have. But I heard him speak a couple times, and it just brought me to tears, because I've known him since he's a baby. And beyond that, I knew his grandfather. I know his dad, and I know how his dad came up and where he came up, in Grottoes, Virginia. So the things that Stephen is saying on behalf of his family, but also on behalf of, you know, disadvantaged people and people who've been taken advantage of for years, it makes me so proud. I could cry right now.
Yeah, no, it's nice to, and it feels like there's a whole generation of basketball players, Steph included, mm-hmm. and LeBron, who have taken upon themselves to make actual changes. And taking action, and that's been so great to see. And you know, for Steve Kerr, for instance, obviously the tragedy of him in his life that makes gun issues very strong, and he's passionate about that. And you know, you said you're still close with him. Do you talk with Steve often? Do you talk to him about issues out there?
Yeah, we have a running text conversation, and most of it is pretty politically charged. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we will talk some basketball and stuff, but for the last few months, it's been more, you know, along the lines of what's going on in the country. Right. And, you know, it's good to have those friends, because a lot of times, you know, when you're out there taking shots, publicly, that's the other part of it. Yes, I do take blowback, but I got to tell you, I get so much, of the other stuff as well, and probably more. It's just the more hurtful stuff sticks around a little longer, right?
Yeah.
But hey, if you're going to get your feelings hurt, you better not do this stuff.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, depending on what happens to the election, we did not know. But right. You know, if for you, I'm assuming you feel passionate about even post-election, but you know, whatever happens, you probably, it's just about, do you think you'll keep up the same momentum going, or does it change and shift?
I guess depending on what happens.
Yeah, sure. I get but, that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I will always, I'm sure, continue to speak out on opioids. And again, the race stuff, I've never understood it. I've always thought it's a pretty crappy way to go through life, not caring about the plight of another person just because it doesn't directly impact yourself. That's a pretty selfish way to go through life. And I think as long as I've got a platform, look, I've got four kids between 27 and 19. And for a lot of their lives, I wasn't my best self. And so I'm trying to do things differently. I'm continuing to try to, you know, make an impact socially while setting a better example for my kids. Right. So there's a lot of self-serving stuff going on here, but I am trying to do things a little differently.
I think everyone can agree. Self-serving is good when it actually also impacts others in a good way too. Yeah. So that's a good way. I got to ask you for your Amy McGrath video.
Yeah.
How many takes did it take for you to make that shot perfectly? You know, how many takes? Cause you know,
It was out there. It was windy out there. We're outdoors. Outdoors. I hadn't shot in a while. I was actually surprised because also in the video, my glasses that I need, they turn into sunglasses outside. Mm. So we couldn't use them for the commercial. Now I'm out there. It's windy and I can't see. And I can't jump or anything else. Funny thing, though, right when I got there, the director, he came up and said, all right. And they had a whole set of stuff, sliding track and, you know, drone type stuff. And he said, and then maybe near the end, you dunk a few. I went, I'm 53.
You're going to lower the rim?
53, yeah.
That's but so
I
funny.
Did. I made a few and then it got where I bet I missed seven in a row at one point. And now I'm starting to sweat and getting mad at myself.
You're like, I swear I was a basketball player.
Yeah, I promise I was.
That's so funny. That's good. Well, it was a fantastic video. And you would never know. That's the beauty of TV and movies. You know, you never know. Yeah. I think you made them on your first shot, and I'm sure you dunked.
That's right. See.
You'll never know.
They probably just cut me from dunking.
That's what it was. It was all those that windmill. Yeah. They thought it was
That's
too
right.
much.
Yeah,
yeah. It was
showing off.
Yeah, exactly. Rex, thanks so much for joining. I really
appreciate it. You got it, Grant.
And everyone, I'm sure, will be happily following you. And let me ask you, is there anything going on that fans should tune in for, or what would you want to direct people to?
No, the only thing, I do this silly blocker charge show on Adult Swim streaming and app services once a week. We do it Wednesday at 7:00. It's me and my best buddy from kindergarten. Yeah, and we've grown up together, and we just do this 30-minute show of watching people get hurt. That's it. Wednesdays at 7 p.m. That's all.
Nothing better than people just falling. You know,
that's right.
It's just
nothing funnier.
And finally,
it's not you.
Yeah, exactly. As long as it's not me. And finally, this is important, and I think we're on the same page here. Dogs are just better than humans, right?
Yes, they are. They're better than cats.
Yes,
they're better than humans.
Right.
Dogs are the best, man. I who doesn't love dogs?
Do you have dogs?
I do. I've got one laying right over here. Deuce. What you doing,
oh,
buddy?
That's a handsome pup.
You good boy?
Oh my god!
Boy? Yeah. He's a good boy.
Oh wow! A little German Shepherd action.
Yep, he is.
That's so great. Nothing better. Nothing better.
Nothing better.
Absolutely. Thanks again. And I've been doing this every pod recently. Please, everyone, go vote. Vote.
Yes.
And,
please vote.
It's so important.
Like your life depends on it, because it does.
It sure does.
It does. Let's go. Thanks, Grant. I'll come back anytime. Let me
know. All right. Thanks so much, Rex. I really appreciate it, everybody.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.